Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee for Wednesday, April 17th. I'm going to make a few announcements and then we'll go ahead and get started with our public hearings today. We are still waiting for paperwork on a number of bills, so there are some that are not going to be moving forward, and then there are others we're going to recess and come back after 5 o'clock because we are waiting for the paperwork. So I will tell you right now that we will go ahead and hear SCR 14 and Senate Bill 287, and then we're going to recess. And I'll let you know what time we'll be back here. I think we'll probably recess till 4:30 and hope that we have most of the paperwork and can start going through bills. So with that, we'll go ahead and open up a public hearing at, on SCR 14. Beth?
Yes, Madam Chair and committee members. Senate Concurrent Resolution 14 has a no revenue impact and no fiscal impact. It designates Organite and Josephinite as the official twin minerals for the state of Oregon.
Welcome, Senator. Glad to have you here in the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, member of the committee, two members of the committee. I'm State Senator Lori Montes Anderson, and I am so excited. Oh, and I represent Gresham, Trout, Delwood Village, and Fairview. And I'm so excited to bring forward a Senate Concurrent Resolution 14, and it would name Oregonite and Josephinite as the twin state minerals of the state of Oregon. And where did I get this idea? Do you see this front row of kids and Jenny Taylor? They are really rock nuts and
rock hounds. Yes,
said, you know, we have a rock. We have all these things, but this is really important to them, and I'll let them explain what it is. But Jenny Taylor, she's a wonderful constituent of mine, whose family's very active in the Oregon Agate and Mineral Society. And she and the members of the Agate and Mineral Society are here to tell you about this concept, and I really hope that you would think seriously and move this bill forward. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you for bringing this forward, and we will call up. It's Jenny Taylor, and then I have, did you have Tom Waterworth that wanted to come with you? And anybody else that would like to come up with you? Okay. Thank you, Senator.
Sure. Ladies first. Okay.
And if you can state your name for the record, thank you for coming here today to share this proposal with us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it all right if I have the Vice President of our Oregon Ag and Mineral Society go first?
Certainly.
Okay.
Thank you. My name is Jim Urbanek. I'm the Vice President, as she mentioned, of the Oregon Agate and Mineral Society. We've been around for 80 years, and we're the oldest lapidary organization in the United States.
Wow.
Just a few words. In 1965, California actually became the first state to have an official rock mineral or state gemstone. In that same year, the Oregon Senate passed a measure making the Thunder Egg our official state rock. Since that time, 22 states now have an official mineral. No other state holds the honor or privilege of having a mineral named after itself or a location within the state. For that matter, no other state has a twin mineral. Oregonite and Josephinite are so closely tied chemically to rocks from space and bravely represent our voyage into the 21st century and into the exploration of frontiers beyond Earth. Always at the forefront in the pioneer spirit of our people and of this place, Oregon will have the honor of being the first state with its own namesake minerals and twins at that. And I like to think that this reflects our ability to do everything twice as well as other states. Thank you.
You may want to pull the microphone down a little bit for you there. Welcome.
Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee, I, Thomas Waterworth, age 12, am here today on behalf of the Renaissance School of Arts and Sciences in support of Oregonite and Josephinite as the official twin minerals of the state of Oregon. We would be the only state with twin minerals. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have any questions, please?
I have a feeling there may be a couple of questions. Senator Hansel.
Having never seen either of these, what do they look like?
Yeah, my question.
I happen to have examples.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad you do.
Because we rock hounds rarely go anywhere without rocks in our pockets.
Could be an Allenite, something like that. That would seem reasonable, yes. I'm on the bill. I shouldn't have a bill. They look like.
Yeah. What are they found?
Yes.
Whoops.
So can I ask a few questions, Madam Chair?
Absolutely.
So we both would like to know, where are these found in Oregon?
They are found primarily on Josephine Creek off of the Illinois River in Josephine County. Not limited to that, but primarily they're alluvial deposits found in the creek and found in the river.
Follow up.
How
are they related to meteorites? You mentioned something about that.
Funny you should ask.
Geology 101 here.
I have passing around are three things. In the larger bag are several examples of Josephinite, including a piece that's been polished and cut, so it really kind of shows off its best properties as a gemstone as well. There's a single large placer nugget pulled from Josephine Creek of Oregonite, which is even rarer than Josephinite. And then the larger hunk of rock with a cut face is a meteorite. They're roughly the same chemical composition. Meteorites differ, however, in that they have other chemical properties that are not found anywhere on Earth, formed by Earth. And in fact, Josephinite and Oregonite come from where the Earth's core and the mantle meet, and it's pushed up into the Earth's crust. It's very rare.
Are these rare anywhere in the world, or just?
These are rare anywhere in the world. In fact, the only other places that they're known to be found are in Ontario, Cyprus, France, and Siberia. And what comes out of those areas is just trace amounts and smaller than a pea. These would be the largest pieces that you would find anywhere in the world coming out of Oregon, and it was first discovered in Oregon.
Interesting. Thank you.
Great. You're welcome.
Do you have a question?
I do.
Yeah.
Since I'm on the bill, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, I will see
them. I will brag that up.
I want to see the rocks.
I want to see the rocks that I didn't know anything about.
I think that's a big deal.
Well, he knows a lot about rocks, and he has a lot in his head.
Yeah.
He's in good company with us.
Are these readily available in the river, or would you have to really hunt and search for them?
They're as readily available as panning for gold.
Oh, let's not go down that road.
Now,
you're opening up a can of worms there, sir.
That said, you'll notice that I've included more pieces of Josephinite in that large bag as opposed to the single piece of Oregonite, and there's a reason for that. Josephinite is highly magnetic due to its higher nickel concentration, and so you could actually stick a golf club with magnets attached to it into Josephine Creek, fish around, and pull up nuggets that way. Oregonite is not magnetic.
So a follow-up question, please.
Follow-up.
Why are they only localized in a small area instead of all around Oregon?
Well, to answer that sort of indirectly, for the same reason that diamonds are only found in particular areas, it's just the geological activities and how fissures and lava flows and magma pockets occur in specific locations, and it pushes up serpentine material, which is some of the oldest rock material found on the globe and coming from the lowest parts of the Earth's mantle. And there just happens to be a particular area in which the serpentine readily comes up through that area and brings the Josephinite and Oregonite up with it.
Is there any commercial application or use of these other than they look pretty?
Yes, and there's historical value to them as well. Prior to the start of the Industrial Revolution, when stainless steel was discovered, these and meteorites were the only sources of stainless steel. In fact, Well into the Industrial Revolution, this material was used as a form of pure iron for processing and smelting for various industrial applications. So while it is very rare, it does have the application of being the purest form of iron available on Earth outside of meteorites.
Follow up. Do we mine? Is there any commercial mining of this product?
No, not to the extent that I just described application to industry. Only as much as maybe gold has applications in various things, but is still very difficult to find and collect.
And one last question. Mm-hmm. Is it valuable?
The piece of organite, that dark nugget?
That's the meteorite.
That's a meteorite.
That's the meteorite.
Okay. The one in the one bag by itself.
That single bag.
The one he just put in his pocket.
Yeah, the one you got.
Watch out. You never know, and they're going to walk off with
this one here?
All right. We
That's $300.
Wow.
I'm watching.
And that's
watching.
Conservatively $300. That bag of Josephinite is at least $1,000, probably more.
Wow. Well, thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
You're very
much.
Welcome. Thank you, Mr.
Any
Chairman.
Any other questions, Senator Hensel?
Young Mr. Tater, good job.
Yeah. Great. Thank you for coming to share your testimony with us today. We appreciate that.
Chair?
Yes. Oh, Senator,
a quick question. One of my best friends is a geologist, and he tells me that Southern Oregon is one of the strangest places in the world for geology. Two mountain ranges hooked together at an H, and there's a lot of bizarre stuff down there, both from point of botany and from what's in the soil and rocks. So this is interesting to bring this forward. But, Mr. Taylor, I had a question for you. Are any of these things related to kryptonite?
No.
Okay, thank you.
I'm feeling a little weak up here, you know.
And I grew up in Roseburg, so I can attest to Southern Oregon's strangeness.
Yes.
Yes.
You set yourself up for that one, Senator. That's all I can say. Well, thank you very much for coming here today and sharing your interest in this bill and for working on this, and appreciate your testimony.
That's pretty cool.
So we have two other people that would like to testify. Do you still want to come up, Debbie Marshall and Barbara Marshall? Is that
right? Yeah, I can.
Sure.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And we'll make sure you get your samples back, and we're watching Senator Olson.
I counted them.
I'll take them right now.
Yeah. Thank you. Hi, I'm Debbie Marshall, and I'm the Secretary of Oregon Ag and Mineral Society.
Welcome.
And I have a couple of letters, partly from myself, but for people who couldn't have been here. And one of them is from a past president, Mike Medvec, who currently does not live in Oregon, but he said, "This is the letter that I want to have read at the Congress of Oregon for the Twin Minerals, to the Congress of Oregon about SCR 14, making Oregonite and Josephinite twin minerals for the state of Oregon. I am past president of Oregon Agate and Mineral Society from 2007. With this letter, I'm asking you to consider this bill and pass it." And dear honorable Oregon state legislators, I support the proposal to make Oregonite and Josephinite the official twin minerals for the state of Oregon. They are found together, are rare on the surface of the earth, and are only found in one state in the United States, and that's Oregon. I would appreciate your support of this proposal. Sincerely, Janice E. Henderson, recent member, Oregon Agate and Mineral Society. And then from my sister and I. As members of Oregon Ag and Mineral Society, the oldest lapidary society in the U.S., founded in 1933 to promote rock collecting hobby and donate annually as founding members of OMSI to their science camps for kids, specifically Camp Hancock near Madras, we wholeheartedly support naming Oregonite and Josephinite as Oregon's official state twin minerals. Sincerely, Barbara E. Marshall, my sister, and myself, Deborah Marshall. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming here to testify. Any questions?
The thing that I wanted to say.
Well, we would have to have you come up to the dais and state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair, my name's Barbara Marshall. The other thing that everyone here needs to know, too, is that the state seal would not be here in the Capitol if it wasn't for Oregon Agate Mineral Society.
Wow.
A lot of the old-timers that aren't with us anymore helped put that together.
I didn't know that. That's very interesting. Well, thank you for coming here today and sharing your concerns. Any other questions? Okay. Thanks for bringing this forward. I think with that, and anybody else that would like to testify on this bill?
No. Oh, we've got one way in the back.
Okay, come on up. This is on SCR 14, the Twin Mineral Bill.
Chairman Dingfelder, committee. As president of the Tom Kitcher,
thanks.
President of the Walda Mining District out of Josephine County, I highly support this bill. I think it would be great for Josephine County, the mining district, and the state of Oregon.
Great. And thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Hey, anybody else like to testify? All right, going once, going twice. With that, we will close the public hearing on SCR 14. Do we have the paperwork ready to go on this?
Madam Chair, yes, you do.
Okay, so is there a fiscal or a revenue impact?
Well, Madam Chair, there is a no fiscal impact and a no revenue impact on this measure.
Okay, great. So I'll go ahead and open up a work session on SCR 14, and we'll take a motion.
Madam Chair, I move that SCR 14 be reported out of committee with a recommendation that it be adopted.
Senator Olson moves SCR 14 be reported out of committee with a recommendation that it be adopted. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Okay, seeing none, the motion passes. And Senator Olson,
yes,
would you like to carry this bill?
Yes, I would.
Your name is on it, and maybe we should ask if Senator Amanis Anderson wants to be a co-carrier.
Sure.
I'll ask her, since I know you're both on that bill. So with that, we will close the work session on SCR 14. I'm going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on SB 287. Beth, can you provide us with an overview, please?
Yes, Madam Chair and committee members, Senate Bill 287. For the record, there's a no revenue and a minimal fiscal impact. It makes the person allowing livestock to run at large subject to a reduced maximum penalty if the person makes all required appearances, evidence does not establish that the person acted intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly, and the person does not have a previous conviction for allowing livestock to run at large.
Senator, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Brian Boquist. If rocks are that easy, this should be even simpler. Colleagues, before you is actually a pretty simple bill, SB 287. I represent the Western Willamette Valley. We don't have open range laws like the good Senator Hansel has over on his side. We have livestock districts. And interesting enough, the law was written back before I think I was born. And in the present law for livestock at large the first time around gives the jurisdiction, the court, anywhere from $250 to $2,000 and put them in jail as a course of action for livestock at large. You have coming around to you an example. What is happening in my counties, because it doesn't happen very often, we've had literally people in my counties ranging from Lane County in the south to Washington County in the north put in jail on the first offense. If you look at what you have there, what we're asking for is, I have several counties that have taken county ordinances and replaced or superseded the state ordinance that says the first time around you'll get a violation of $250 for an unintentional event. But we'd like to get a consistent fix basically in the Willamette Valley. And what we're really talking about here, colleagues, is you flip over the letter that's there from the Polk itemizer and you go to the back page or the back side. I will be the first to admit, and luckily I didn't get caught, is that on Friday night, stray dogs at 12:30 at night ran my horses through that fence right there, which is a horse fence, which Senator Hansel will recognize, which is a mesh fence, a barbed wire on top and an electric. The stray dogs at 12:30 ran the horses right through it. We are down to less than adequate patrol deputies in my county, so it's not worth calling the sheriff's office to even have them come out. So we got the horses and put the horses back in. The other thing that we have in rural western Willamette Valley, for everybody to know, is, of course, we have stray dogs, and we have our elk herds, which our farmers are always contending with, and they manage to run through the fences too. And then we have predators that are out there. And in this particular case, what this bill does is, in the first time, if it's unintentional, the dogs run your animals out, something happens, that it makes it a less stiff penalty the first time around. Now, obviously, you know, there's abusers of everything that's out there, and if you have elk and you got to deal with that the second time around, that's not it. But again, rather, as you see there, we have different counties trying to take independent action, so the consistency is not very good because it's pretty blurry out in my area where the county lines are tops. I mean, the county road district doesn't even put out we're leaving Yamhill and going to Polk County, and some of the farmers, of course, spend more time arguing with ODOT than they do with the county, so figuring out where the lines are at times and where the livestock was. So again, colleagues, it's a very simple bill. Just makes the first-time offense a $250 fine instead of being anywhere from $250 to jail to $2,000, and makes it consistent in the valley. And I'd be delighted to take any questions, especially from Senator Bates, who's looking puzzled.
I really am.
Senator,
for
thank
40
you,
years,
for your testimony.
I had a farm with about 15, 20 cows on it and four or five horses. And my neighbors had the same thing. We had 50, 60-acre plots. And it was not unusual for someone's cattle to get out, someone's horse to get out. Do the best you can, but they're always sneaking through something on us, you know. And we never even thought of any penalties or going to jail. We just call each other, hey, cows are out, you know, and we all get together and try to herd them back in. And once in a while, one got hit and killed and wrecked the car. We weren't in open range, but everyone did the best they could to keep them in. And I assume there's some people, of course, make no effort at all, and that's different. Right? They're a nuisance. But most people don't do that. So you tell me that I'm listening to you. In your county, somebody can go to jail because a cow gets out inadvertently?
No, somebody did go to jail, Senator.
It's ridiculous.
You're exactly correct, and you'll see Polk County has taken, the Polk County commissioners have taken action in that particular county. But again, it comes back to, I mean, two issues that jump out is, as you pointed out, we don't have open range and we have livestock districts instead. That's the first issue. And the second issue is a lot of this really comes up to rural-urban divide. And as you well know, we have a right to farm law. In fact, this committee has heard that before and we've made tweaks to it. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't work. It's kind of like the same conflict we have in the forest area where we start building houses in forest places and they burn down and they wonder why they burnt down. In this particular case, as it doesn't happen very often, the present statute is so old that we've added so many different fines and penalties in there. I think when it probably started out, it was like you said, they probably got fined $50 and it went to the local charity or something like that. But as we've changed the laws over 40 or 50 years, we've now expanded the options that we've given judges in that. And since it doesn't happen very often, you get some pretty diverse sentences, like 24 hours in the pokey, you know, so on and so forth like that.
Sorry. I had a question about, did you have another question?
Just a quick follow-up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you think this bill goes far enough?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, I actually really think it does, and that's because, as you point out, if it's a first-time offense, mm-hmm. right, and it's unintentional, and of course, then the next thing that happens, if they get the fine, then, you know, they got a problem. And, of course, I'll be the first to admit, Senator Bates, that we have members where the elk run through, and it's pretty hard to keep fences
yeah.
up. And I can't keep my lower fences up. The only good news is I'm surrounded by timber on three sides, so my cows run into the timber, and I have to run them back from the timber. But it's actually a pretty good first step. It matches what some of the counties are proposing now. And as you can see, Polk County's actually passed an ordinance that pretty much matches this at a county level to try and, you know, put consistency in Polk County. But again, Madam Chair, members of the Senate, it comes down to is, you know, where's the county line, you know, even in the valley, and why is it different? Why is my constituent across on the Yamhill side treated different than Polk versus the Marion versus the Tillamook versus the Lane versus, I can go on because I'm surrounded by all you people.
All right. Any other questions for the senator? Senator,
well,
did you follow up? Uh-huh.
If a county doesn't have an ordinance like this, you know, it's sort of a hands-off thing, does this now impose that? I don't know what Jackson County, Josephine County have down there, some of the eastern Oregon counties where we have a different attitude about this sort of thing.
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, if this bill was passed, it would make the first fine that you got for the first offense $250. And so that would be the first offense if that's what the judge wanted to throw the book at him with. And, of course, I wish I lived in your area because, again, I have a much more diverse district with more counties and more urban interface.
Just a quick question. The way that I read this, it's prospective, so you're not opening up past penalties
Check.
Or convictions?
Madam Chair, you're correct.
Okay, great. That's the only question I had. All right. With that, we also... We don't have anybody signed up to testify besides yourself on this bill, so let me see, and if we have the paperwork, we can move it. I'm assuming would like to carry it?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So we'll see. Is there anybody else that would like to testify on this bill? Because we don't have anybody on the sign-up sheet. Okay, seeing none, I will go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 287. We'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 287, and Beth, we have all the paperwork for this.
Madam Chair, for Senate Bill 287, you have a minimal fiscal impact and a no revenue impact that's on the bill itself.
Okay, so I'll take a motion.
Madam Chair, I move that Senate Bill 287 be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator also moves that Senate Bill 287 be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? And Senator Bates?
I'm going to be a no vote, but I may be a yes vote on the floor because I have to find out how this affects some other counties that may not have as draconian laws as this in place already, and I don't want to impose that on those counties.
Well, we do have somebody from Oregon Department of Agriculture that was standing by on the phone if we wanted to call them, and we're in a work session, but we could do that if you would like.
You can also fix it on the House side. I'll tell you, I want to get it out of committee and move the bill. It's a great bill. But I want to make sure we don't inadvertently affect places that aren't where the good senator lives, where we take a completely different attitude about animals getting loose. And we all work together getting back inside the fence, and we don't go around fining people and putting them in jail for it when it's clearly inadvertent and they're doing the best they can to keep their animals in.
Fair enough. And we can also make sure you get the ODA. The person who we were going to call.
Yeah, I'd like to talk to him about that. So I'll give it a yes now, and if we have to fix the house, we'll do it.
Okay. So, Senator Hansel?
It seemed I had the same kind of concern because it was going out in my area too. But it would appear to me, as I look at the bill itself, it's amending an ORS.
Yeah, there's existing statutes.
Which is an existing statute, which our counties are already under,
right.
If I read this correctly.
We just don't enforce it in our county then.
Yeah, part of it is how, I mean, there's discretion in how the judge decides the fine. And so my understanding, this will be sort of a ceiling, so somebody could not get higher than a certain fine. And maybe it's just because I sit on judiciary and we talk about fines every day and penalties every day.
This does not go far enough.
And so do you want to, Lisa, do you want to come up here and just confirm
I'll
that?
I'm fine.
That's okay. We have the time.
No, I'm fine. It's okay.
Why don't you just come up and put it on the record just to so it's clear? Plus she gets to show off her OSU scarf. Did you by any chance go to OSU, Lisa?
For the record, Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. And Madam Chair, yes, I did go to OSU.
We thought we'd get you a plug in here since it's OSU day.
Yeah, thank you.
If you want to answer that, you probably heard the question. If you want to address that.
I heard part of the question. And we did have Roger Huffman, who is our expert in terms of the livestock at large, open range and closed range. You may remember back to the bison bill. This relates to that law. And what happens in a protected district, which would be closed range, versus what happens in an open range situation. And this is a statutory cap for what can be fined. There is, discretion within that for law enforcement to take action, something below that. And as I talked with our staff about it, they said typically, first-time occurrence for someone, it's no fault of their own, something has happened. Law enforcement is very lenient with them and would answer it the same way.
Holds them. What is going on?
Yeah.
Here?
So it really is the statutory maximum that is being addressed here.
Okay. Any other questions? Does that answer your question, Senator?
Well, that's what I thought the answer to the question was.
Yeah, or that confirms your
confirms your answer.
Right. Yes. Yes. Okay.
Well, Joseph County doesn't have any sheriff's departments, though. They're safe. Okay. And then
and only have three deputies.
We only got about three or four in ours. Who reports this?
Okay, so we are in a work session. There is a motion on the table. Why don't you go ahead and call the roll then, Jennifer?
I'm a yes, but it doesn't go far enough.
Aye.
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 Thanks, Brian.
With that, the motion carries, and Senator Boquist is going to be carrying the bill on the floor. We will go ahead and close the work session on Senate Bill 287. Okay, colleagues, you're going to have a little break, but first let me tell you a couple of things that aren't moving today. Since what we have left are the work sessions for the day. We're done with our public hearings, and we're done with public hearings for Senate bills. Senate Bill 179 is not moving forward today, and if you recall, that was a companion bill to the Waldo Lake bill, and I'm going to, for the record, I have a letter from the Marine, from both the Marine Board and the Board of Aviation, so I'm going to ask both of you gentlemen if you want to come up. Hopefully everybody received this letter, because I did ask for it to be put on OLIS.
Madam Chair and committee members, it is on OLIS and it is in your packet.
Okay, so I'm going to ask the maybe if the Aviation Board and the Marine Board can speak to this, and I appreciate, gentlemen, that that you're, what I see as a commitment in this letter, that you're going to work to resolve this and that moving forward with this legislation is not necessary. However, we always have future legislative sessions, so if we happen to hear that this problem is not resolved, then we may be back here, or you may be back in front of us. But if you would like to walk us through the letter, that would be greatly appreciated.
Chair Dinkfelder, members of the committee, Mitch Schrecker, Director of the Department of Aviation. Thank you for taking the time today to allow us to talk about this. This is a letter that was jointly signed by Scott Bruin and myself, and it kind of speaks for itself. We agreed to engage in cooperative rulemaking, develop a process that provides coordination between our two agencies, and regulate seaplanes on lakes and waterways. Excuse me. And this will provide us the opportunity to work together on language that gives the governor and his environmental and transportation advisors authority if there were ever to be another occasion where the two boards don't work together well. And I don't think that'll ever happen again.
Would you like to say a few words?
Chair Dinkfelder, members of the committee, for the record, Scott Bruin, Director of the Oregon State Marine Board. We appreciate the opportunity to provide a letter to the committee regarding the cooperative requirement between the Aviation Board and the Marine Board with regard to seaplanes. As we stated in the letter, we worked through a process based on what we understood the statute to be requiring some form of cooperation between the two boards, and engaged in that cooperation over a couple of months, both my appearance before the Aviation Board and then our two boards meeting in Portland to talk through the issue. The difficulty became essentially at the vote for Waldo Lake, a difference in opinion of how seaplanes should be handled, which it would appear to me that the current statute wants that type of a back and forth between the two boards, because one does represent the boating community and one does represent the aviation community. So we had a little bit of that interaction in the process. The final rulemaking wasn't completed, so we don't know where that would have ended up, and depending upon where the Waldo Lake bill ends up, we'll see where the Aviation Board ends up on this. But I think between the two boards, we also agree that because we do have our interests are a little bit different in regards to seaplanes, that the Aviation Board wants to maintain that authority while they're in flight. The Marine Board wants authority when they're on the water, that in cases where we do have a conflict, it would be advisable for both of us to have some sort of an intermediary to help work us through that process with the two boards. So we see that as being a positive solution of working through this issue. Okay.
Thank you, gentlemen. I'll see if there's any questions. Okay. Well, we appreciate it. We like when we see, agencies sitting next to each other and practically holding hands. So we appreciate that you guys are working together, and we'll look forward to hearing updates. And I'm sure we'll be asking for an update towards either the end of the session or our first interim committee meeting.
Thank you.
Okay, the other bill, just so folks know are not moving forward, is Senate Bill 790, and this one is creates the offense of equine tripping, because we had the bill passed already on the Senate floor. So my understanding is that we no longer need that bill. We'll take that off the agenda. We are still waiting for paperwork on several other bills. Do we have the paperwork on 800? That one's ready to go, correct?
Yes, Madam Chair, you do.
Okay, so I will go ahead and open up I think that's the last one that we have that's ready before we take a recess. I will go ahead and open up a work session on Senate Bill 800. And so, colleagues, there is a dash 3 amendment. Beth's going to explain the amendment, and then I don't see Senator Przanski, this is his bill, but why don't you go ahead and explain it, and then we can see if there's any, we can have a motion and see if there's any discussion.
Madam Chair and committee members, the dash 3 amendment that's in front of you and on OLIS, it establishes a 7-member task force on pesticide application reporting. It requires the task force to study and develop recommendations on whether state and local governments should be required to report pesticide applications by public applicator or public trainees. It requires the task force to report to the governor and to interim committee of the Legislative Assembly no later than October 1st, 2014. It requires the State Department of Agriculture to provide staffing and declares an emergency effective upon passage.
So, colleagues, the dash 3 amendments that are before you the chair requested them in collaboration with the proponents of the bill. It appeared to me that there were definitely some issues that needed to be resolved, but there seems that it best be worked through a task force process because there was a lot of unanswered questions. So it was a recommendation that we have that task force created so we can continue the discussions and find out the best way to study and develop recommendations for, as you can see in the language, regarding whether state and local governments should be required to report pesticide applications. And also the task force would take testimony, review the structure, and then it identifies what the members of the task force are. And of course, there is fiscal, so this would have to be referred to Ways and Means.
No, there's a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact statement on
that. Okay. So with that, why don't we take a motion and then we can see if there's a discussion.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the dash 3 amendments dated 4/16/2013.
Okay, Senator Bates moves the dash 3 amendments into Senate Bill 800 dated 4/16/13. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. I did not make the motion to move this bill forward or this amendment forward. In our history, as per testimony, there was a reporting group that was already established years past. I believe it was called PERS. It didn't work because it was unfunded, and I feel that to put together another task force and spend more money to find something that wasn't working, I can't support.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. So noted that Senator Olson is a no. Any other, I can call the roll. Any other objections? Okay. With that, the amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 800 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Bates moves Senate Bill 800 as adopted with the dash 3s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussions? Senator Hess?
I think we create too many task forces in the legislature. I really do. And I plead guilty to being an instigator of some of those myself. But I think by giving up so easily and creating so many task forces that really we're falling down on the job, and that it should be we are responsible to be resolving these issues more than we do, and I'm just sort of increasingly frustrated that the default position is always a task force. And again, we do this in the education committee, we're just sort of drowning in task forces and studies, And I would like to return to a time when we could resolve these issues and reach consensus and compromise and collaboration to resolve these things without having to just do a default task force. So I actually do share some of the sentiment of Senator Olson on this, and I just throw that out there for what it is.
So, Senator, I appreciate your comments. I will say that this committee probably very rarely sends out task force, which I know we can't say for the Education Committee, but I do share your, you know, my feeling is that if we can get things done up here, we certainly try our best, but obviously this is a very complex issue. It needs some more study. It is also, there are many different agencies that overlap, and proponents of the bill felt that it wasn't ready to move forward in the current form and that it needs more discussion. So I guess it's a two-edged sword. I don't think we should move forward with a bill if all the details haven't been worked out. And this also holds people's feet to the fire, so to speak, to make sure that they will sit together at the table and hopefully come back with a resolution. And I wish that all of the issues that come before us we could solve in one session, but it doesn't always work that way.
Well, Madam Chair, I would just say that if, you know, assume for a moment there was no task force were not allowed. I think that would pressure the proponents to find that middle ground, and it would pressure the opponents to find some middle ground, or else it would pass. So.
I was going to say, I know you're channeling former Senator Atkinson, who
No. I'm not saying
not
no task. Well, maybe so, but I think the default of task forces relieves the pressure on some of the key stakeholders in a lot of this and a lot of these issues, and on us to find the middle ground.
Well, I appreciate your comments. Certainly, if there was, if we had come to resolution in this legislative session, we would be moving the bill forward. But unfortunately, we're not there yet. So with that, we have a motion on the table. Senate Bill 800 with the dash threes. The clerk call the roll, please.
Senator Bates.
Aye.
Senator Hansel.
Aye.
Senator Haas.
No.
Senator Vice Chair Olson.
No.
Chair
Dinkfelder. Aye. With that, the motion carries. You're going to do a minority report with the full bill?
You
shouldn't have suggested that.
I know. And with that, I will close the work session.
I just may I add a comment real
Certainly.
Quick?
Certainly, yes.
First of all, I appreciate your willingness to work to get a collaborative effort. I think there has been, since we first heard the bill, a lot of work being done to try to come together. I think we've run out of time. And that's why I'm supportive of your efforts to continue the discussion.
Great. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. With that, and the carrier will be Senator Przanski, since this is his bill.
Oh, got to do a minority report then. Got to do one.
So with that, I will close
Madam
the
Chair,
work session.
I give notice right now.
Okay.
I give notice of a potential minority report.
See what you started? This is going to be the first bipartisan minority report we've had, I think, in a while, though. There you go. Except you're not in a minority, so I don't know. Just kidding. Okay, with that, we close the work session. I think we're going to be in recess because we're waiting for more paperwork. Is that correct? Yes. Okay. So we are going to recess for an hour. So, committee members, if you can please be back here at 4:45. Then we hopefully will send the message to fiscal and revenue that we will have the paperwork. So we are in recess.